Oh.
This is a journey.
Nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the Collision. This is the radio show where sports and politics collide here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. I'm Dave Zirin, joined as always by 11-year NBA veteran, author, and activist, Etan Thomas. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm doing great. A little sad that Chuck Modiano's not in the house, but also thrilled that we have the best pinch hitter since Rusty Staub. The man, oh man, the man himself, Manny Mota. Nah, his name is Kevin McNutt. How you doing, coach?
I don't know about that Rusty Staub thing, man, but I'm here. You're coming off the bench, man. I'm going to fire it up. Let's go.
Hey, that's a pure compliment, man. I'm naming after one of the great pinch hitter of all time, but also Manny Mota as well.
Yes, sir.
The Dodgers, your World Series champions. But that's not what we're here to talk about this week. We have a heck of a show for you. At 10:30, bottom of the hour, we have former NBA player Tariq Abdul-Wahad is going to join us. Tariq Abdul-Wahad, former lottery pick back in 1997, one of the great NBA drafts. Heck of a player, but even more than that, a principled political activist, a principled Muslim man. And we wanted to speak to him because of the election of Zohran Mamdani as the new mayor of New York City, which has been a political earthquake that's ripped out far beyond the borders of the Big Apple. Etan Thomas, I know we're going to talk about this with Tariq Abdul-Wahad, who, by the way, is also a founding member of Athletes for Ceasefire, taking a stand against the Israeli genocide in Gaza. But Etan, when those election results came in, I mean, I just want to ask you right now, man, what were your thoughts as they came rolling in across the wires?
I mean, I had a lot of thoughts, you know, when I saw the outrage from the right and them saying that they're going to pack up their stuff and move to Florida. I'm like, are y'all serious? And I was like, y'all gonna move to Florida? I was like, man. I was like, well, go ahead, go, bye. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I you pack your bags. Yeah, you can go. New York is too crowded anyway. But
exactly.
it was a great win. And you know, the principles that he stands on, it tells you the direction. And I hope the Democrat elites pay attention to this. Because the people have spoken, and they've spoken to what they want. And the Democrats, they can't keep toeing the line on issues of, you know what I mean, like Gaza and issues. I mean, they can't side with the Republicans and what they're doing. That's what they're doing. And saying that we are the lesser of two evils. We're going to side with them on this, this, and this. Like, you people are not going for that anymore. And I hope they listen to that. That's the message that they should receive from this election.
Yeah, I hope they listen or they go away, because when you have the senator of New York State, Chuck Schumer, not even endorse Mamdani, the Democratic nominee, the day of the race.
Yeah.
I mean, that just shows not just, you know, maybe his own bigotry about a Muslim candidate or his allegiance to Israeli foreign policy. It's less about that to me than just being in what you said, just incredibly out of touch mm-hmm. with what the electorate wants. And once a politician is out of touch, it is time to leave. Yes. It's not about age. And I can't believe I'm about to quote Bill Clinton here, but I still am because it's a good quote. It's not about age. It's about the age of your ideas.
Oh, and the age, quote.
Yeah, that was his anti-Bob Dole thing when everybody said, Dole's too old and Clinton wanted those senior votes. Right. So Slick Willie was like, his age is fine. You know, I'm Slick Willie.
Slick Willie. But
it's the age of those ideas that I have a problem with. So that's what you have right now. So we're obviously going to talk about this more with Tariq Abdul-Wahad. I don't want to get too into it right now. Although I will say this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just about Mamdani. I mean, this was a bloodbath for the Republican Party mm-hmm. across this country. And I was really doing a deep dive. And the one thing that all these races had in common was that all the candidates were like, this is a referendum about Donald Trump. This is a referendum about authoritarianism. So you had, I thought that was interesting because you had people with very different ideas on the Democratic side, but this kind of one uniting theme,
right,
which was bleep that guy
yep.
in the White House yep. and let's make a stand against him. So that was beautiful to me, but I digress. We're going to talk about that at the bottom of the hour. You know, one of the things about Tuesday night when those results came in was that the three of us mm-hmm. were just getting home from one heck of an event yeah. that the Collision put on over at Bus Boys and Poets in Tacoma Park. Packed house, incredible guests, live radio show, Chuck Modiano up there with us, incredible guests like Dr. Angel Jones from the University of Maryland, Hall of Fame sports writers, David Aldridge, Kevin Blackstone, two amazing young poets, and a crowd that really wanted to talk to us. So just an amazing night. Definitely, I know we want to hear what Coach thought about it mm-hmm. since he had a front row seat. But starting with you, Atan, please give us your thoughts about that event and some of the ideas that were raised.
I thought it was amazing. You know, I mean, having that level of discussion, that debate, the banter, you know, we've been talking about media accountability for a while now. And, you know, David Aldridge and Kevin Blackstone, as I said there, I have the utmost respect for them. But we disagreed on a few topics, yep. and a few modes of how media accountability, what this should look like and who's responsible and who should be held accountable and who the blame should be placed on. You know what I mean? But it was a fantastic discussion. Those discussions are needed. And we afterwards, even when we disagreed, we shook hands, we took pictures, we smiled. It doesn't have to be like a beef. We just are a different exchange of ideas. And I think it's important for people to be able to see that, especially the younger generation, because what we see from politicians, especially MAGA, is they don't know how to discuss topics without mudslinging and becoming personal and little kindergarten nicknames that Trump gives for people. And it's just so, I'm like, how old are you? Like this. Let me say this real quick. So my daughter was watching some, she was supposed to watch the debates and like analyze how they happen and everything like that. A class presentation, right? And she's watching it and she's watching Kamala Harris and she's taking her notes and everything like that. And then she's watching Trump. And she was like, he's doing everything wrong according to this. Like, he's not sticking to the topic. He's diverting. He's not answering the question. He's going back to the... And it was like that. But still, it was like people were okay with that. So the bar is so low with Trump that even, you know what I mean, middle schoolers know that, no, this is not the way it's supposed to happen. And it definitely isn't. So I thought Tuesday night was absolutely great.
Amen. And before I throw it to you, Coach, for your thoughts, I just had to give an example of what you're talking about because it speaks close to my heart. We're having a very serious debate right now, for example, in my family about Mamdani with me and my Jewish extended family, of me obviously making the argument that saying he's an anti-Semite is not true, that I think most of the anti-Semitism, it's coming from the far right in this country, that, you know, our boats as a Jewish community, we got to stop seeing them as being tied to the far right wing or the oppression of Palestinians, but actually ally ourselves with all groups trying to lift themselves up. You know, that's the debate in my family, and it's a nuanced debate. It's a difficult debate. And then the day before the election, Donald Trump tweets, if you are Jewish and you vote for Mamdani, then you are stupid. Mm-hmm. I mean, what is that? You know, all that does is pour gasoline right as you're trying to put out some fires and create some of that, you know, disagreeing without being disagreeable vibe that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he is so poison to debate in this country, to honest discussion. And I love the fact that your daughter was able to see that and break that down. I hope she brought that into the classroom too, because
I'm sure she did.
So throwing it to you, Coach, right away, you were there, you had a front row seat. Feel free, man, explore the studio space right now and tell us what you thought of the night.
First of all, one thing that hit me flush, like Ali Wright, was, and I say this about you guys all the time when I'm out in the streets or sports and kids and so forth. I reference the relationship that I have with you guys. But it's apparent on the radio, but not to the level of being in person with you gentlemen. And what I'm thinking about is your energy, your emotion, your passion. And trumping all of that, I don't want to say trumping, but
that's okay.
Exceeding all that is your sincerity. Mm-hmm. And I know we're on radio, and that's the venue we have to reach the folks. But when we do this, and I hope this was an inaugural event that we do more and more frequently around other spots. And we're in Tacoma, but we can do that down at U Street and out in Arlington and at more bus boys and ports. That we need to do this more often, and the people need to see, because you do it well on radio, but it's nothing like seeing you in person. And that was that hit me flush. That was the first thing, and particularly E, because he gets to going, man. But it's not, it's not contrived. It's not debate for debate's sake that we can see on ESPN right now if you wanted to. Right. It's real, and it radiates, man. And I just, you know, I just smile because I see him, you know, boxing out back in the day when you were playing ball for Syracuse against Georgetown. But that's another conversation. My daughter went to Georgetown, and I'm a John Thompson. I played for Daddy John at St. Anthony's, but we ain't going to get into that. Okay. I'm gonna stay on point. So that's good. We got into the, and I like the fact, and I'm a referee, so I understand, Eitan did not, I'm just going to say this, Eitan gave all respect to the guests, in particular David Aldridge and KB Blackstone, but he didn't deny that he had disagreements with it. And I love that part, because that accentuates the debate, and that gives the reality. So that was good, because some of the things, for example, we talked about, okay, irresponsible broadcasting, and who is to make it responsible, you know? And in particular, David's response was, okay, you guys got power talking about us in the audience, and we don't like certain things, to basically just write in, you know? And I'm saying, that is that the answer? You know, what do we do? Because you were highlighting several examples, E, about... well, what about this? What about this? What is this? And we got into the debate thing about debate broadcasting journalism as opposed to what's real.
Right.
And I thought their answer was like, oh, well, this is the only way we can fight. Just, you know, send a note to ESPN and say, I don't like this segment. We got to do more than that. And the other thing, and I'm getting out on this because I told Dr. Jones afterwards, because and people had to know she's been on your show, and she was talking about how, you know, the backlash she was getting. And all I could think of was Dr. King. And I'm a lot older, you guys. I know of King, and I was, 12, 13 when he died, and what happened to the city after that. Mm-hmm. And I just told her, and I'm telling you, and I'm telling the audience now, one of the things he said, and I'm paraphrasing it, but silence is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Silence is acceptance. So what we did and what we did Tuesday night and what we must continue to do is not fall into that, you know, we have to do something. We have to do whatever the suggestions are, whatever we have to do. But silence is acceptance. And we cannot do that, period.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, two highlights for the night for me. And then I'd love to hear from Etan what you are really leaving with. Mm-hmm. Is other than the brilliant youth poets who I hope it goes without saying were inspiring. And afterwards, everybody loved the fact that we started with them. Mm-hmm. It also brought some young people out that night, which gave a beautifully multi-generational mm-hmm. feel. Mm-hmm. Two things that I'm really going to carry with me. The first is when Dr. Angel Jones said that when she was getting death threats, they started publishing pictures of her house and address, except it wasn't her house and address. Right. It was a different Angel Jones. Yeah. So she actually had to contact another Angel Jones to tell this, I assume, young woman, middle-aged woman who was just going about her life, that her life now might be in danger. Yeah. Because of something a college professor said in a classroom. I mean, that in and of itself is something I'm really going to carry with me. Because they always say they're free speech warriors. And yet, how is it free speech if you're literally making people fearful for their lives to have an opinion? The second thing that I'm really going to keep with me was something our man Chuck said. Because I also, first of all, David Aldridge, Kevin Blackistone, these are my heroes. They're mm-hmm. one of the reasons I'm in this business. I really hope that goes without saying. The argument that we fight bad sports writing with good sports writing, or that we combat bad commentary by just turning off the TV. You know, that's something DA said several times. Just turn off the TV. Just turn it off. Makes it sound like we live on a level playing field. Mm-hmm. But then Chuck made it really plain, because Chuck was like, look, there's this thing called capitalism. Mm-hmm. And if they have determined that racism sells, then they are going to promote that. And choosing not to watch that doesn't change the fact that they are profiting off of it.
Right.
So our individual ability to turn off the TV doesn't really affect that much of what they're projecting mm-hmm. out to us. Mm-hmm. And part of that also is because a lot of their profits are locked in way beyond ratings. Yep. I mean, mm-hmm. I just think that, like, mm-hmm. this idea that we're on this level playing field is if culture is like a buffet mm-hmm. and you just get to choose what you want, when the reality, as you said, Etan, with your reference to Malcolm X, mm-hmm. is that, like, and I'll let you give that full metaphor, but the way I've always said it in my mind is, like, if you only give people Coke and Pepsi, don't get on their butts if they don't like orange juice.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so it's about the choices we're provided. It's about the power we have and don't have. And I thought Chuck really brought that home. And if that wasn't there, then, and you brought it home too, Etan, with when you talked about Malcolm X. But like, without that, I think the evening would have been incomplete.
No, I agree. I wanted to ask y'all a point, and we went to the crowd. And we always listen to the feedback, so please keep mm-hmm. giving us feedback of how we can do it more effectively and better. And of course, we have to work on the mic situation. So we have to work on that with Bus Boys and Poets. So that was out of our control. You know what I mean? That wasn't us. We're going to work on it. But you know, one thing that really went over well was the crowd participation. We went to mm-hmm. the Q&A. And so my wife, got to give a shout out to Nicole. She asked a great question. And I wanted to pose that, you know, throw that back to you all, because David Aldridge gave his response and then we kind of had to move on. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yes.
A long time, so next time we have to allot more time for the Q&A portion. But her point was that ESPN, you know, and not just ESPN, there's FS1, all the sports channels, really. When they have a female reporter or a commentator or a co-host, she was like, why is, you know, like, say us right now, we're in the box. So it shows us from here. You know what I mean? Shows like our upper torso right here. But with female reporters, you get a full shot. And you're seeing the mini dress, and they're walking around, and you know you're seeing the low cut V, and it's like it's not just ESPN; it's every single, you know, sports show, sports channel you turn on the TV, and all of them. You know what I mean? Local channel, all of them do the same thing. And she was like, "Is that the only way for women to be able to excel in this world? Is to sexually objectify themselves because they don't do that with the men. They're completely different shots. And I thought it was a great point. I just didn't quite agree with David Aldridge's response, you know, respectfully, but I wanted you to answer that question. So we didn't get a chance to talk about that, you know, at the event. So, Coach, what is your response to that?
Coach, whose daughter happens to be, we have to say, in all honesty, a nationally renowned sports reporter who I'm sure also wrestles with the fact of having to balance, looks with making sure that being appreciated for what's going on between the ears. So certainly an issue, Coach, that you're speaking to with a great deal of personal knowledge.
Yeah, you didn't say her name, Monica McNutt. Yeah,
Monica McNutt. I was leaving that to you there, buddy. Go ahead.
So again, and by the way, man, you know, your wife is fantastic, beautiful lady. And I said the same thing to Chuck's wife, who I met for the first time, too. I'm like, how do these ladies pick you guys? Did they get a tax credit or something?
Okay.
But anyway.
That's called marrying up.
Right. I got you. But it was a fantastic question, naturally, because Monica's my daughter. Right. And the big screen thing, I think, is just happening because the big screen is what we all have, you know, the 50-inch, 80-inch TV. So I think that's part of that, why you have the big screen and the ladies are standing there with the guys. But, and you understand, when Monica got ESPN, I'm dad, and she's always going to be my baby, you understand? Right. And I'm saying, okay, now, your audience is 80% men, I assume. I don't know what the exact number is, but I know it's not 50-50.
Right.
And they sit there and they're googling and all this kind of stuff. But Monica has kept it real. She's professionally dressed. She's not playing into that. And I don't want her to play into that. Let me put it this way, gentlemen. I hear all the comments. Hey, I'm Monica's dad now. You know what I mean? I'm a legend in this town, my own self, but I'm Monica's dad now. That's all good. And the comments going along, oh, she's beautiful. Oh, she's, you know, she's so bright and she's gorgeous and all that kind of stuff. No. Okay, fine. Thank you. I got you. I'm more appreciative. And by the way, David dropped the name. You guys, Dave Zirin, who mentored Monica, Donald Huff, who has been for the Washington Post, started all Mets, Eitan, I don't know if you know that, back in the 60s. Okay. When I talked to them, what's the editor for the, he went to the LA Times, Kevin Meredith for the Washington Post when the LA Times was back. I grew up with him. When I hear comments from them, you know what they say? Monica is prepared. Mm. Monica is good. She's done her homework. Mm. Those are the comments I get, you know, I take stock into. I don't want to hear, you know, she is attractive and all of that good stuff. But those are the comments that I appreciate more because that means she's just as good as that cat that's standing next to her. And all of this, you know what I'm saying?
And I think, Nicole and I actually were also speaking a little bit back and forth as David gave his answer, David Aldrich, which, you know, with all respect, again, DA is my guy, but we both weren't thrilled or found fully satisfactory the answer he was giving because, again, they would put the onus then, like there was agreement, like, yes, there is sexism in sports coverage. Yes, it really says something that they've gone from being behind the desk to now walking around. And yes, it certainly does appear like that you have a lot of men who do sports coverage who look like they fell down the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down. But that variety does not extend itself to women sportscasters. But then he said, like, that women then need to take it upon themselves to not dress this way or this. And again, it goes back to like, no. It's about us as men too. Like fighting against what is a structurally unfair system. Mm-hmm. Like to put all the, I mean, think about that in other categories. Like if you said like, well, I'm not going to say anything. I mean, name the issue. I'm not going to say anything about police brutality because it doesn't affect me. Or I'm not going to say anything about X, Y, and Z because it doesn't affect me. That's not how you make effective change. Right. Now, and if you agree, as David and Kevin, you know, surely do, Kevin Blackstone in this case, I meant, like, surely do believe that it's not good and it needs to change, mm-hmm. then I think we all have to see this as a collective project. to make that change and not accept it and just say, well, that's just the way it is. Because one of the things that was particularly bothering Nicole was the demotion of Doris Burke. And because Doris Burke, like for Nicole, that was an example of somebody who did refuse to play that game, and looks like she may have paid a price for that fact.
Yeah, you know, there was a movie back in the day, and I can't remember it, but it was examining the commentators on Fox News, and there was all these different women, and they were showing how they were being objectified. Their skirt had to be a certain way, they had to be a certain weight, they had to look a certain way. Do you remember that movie? This was a while ago, and it just seems like, you know, when you see ESPN, when you see the different shows of how they're even marketing the new shows coming on. I mean, you can't deny that there is a sexual component that they're doing, you know, sexualizing the different female commentators. You can't really deny it.
And I'll tell you this too. The next time, we've already talked about this, but the next time, and Dr. Angel Jones pointed this out and is very powerful. The next time it's not an easy thing to do. And part of that has to do with the nature of the profession itself. Mm-hmm. And we tried for this past one. We really did try. But we're going to keep trying to make sure that women sports writers, when we do these live events,
definitely,
also have a voice there so they could speak to their experience directly. Something that Dr. Jones pointed out would be an important addition to the conversation, yet right, just another example of what made Dr. Jones such an indispensable part of that particular evening. But let me ask you something, Coach. Let me ask you, what vibe did you get when the event ended and you were talking to people and seeing people? I mean, because that's when you really hear the straight dope. What was the vibe like in the crowd when you were just walking around getting ready to leave?
The vibe was all positive, and it was thumbs up, nods, pats on the back as to pat your partner that you're sitting next to and you're meeting for the first time is like, man, this was relevant. This was valued. I'm glad I made it. You know, it's a metro stop away, but, you know, coming down there by car and parking and the whole nine yards, people really appreciated it. It was like, hey, man, we need to do this again. We need to do this more often because you touched bases. The dialogue was good. And again, I'm putting butter on Eton. I don't put butter on you, Dave, because we don't get along too well. But the fact that he just said flat out, David, I hear you. I don't disagree. I see it this way. That's the stuff that's important. Because, and like you say, D.A., nothing hurt. It's like, hey, we're competing. You shot, I got the rebound, now I'm taking you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And basically, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. No animosity. But that, I'm going to get out real quick, Dave, but that is the kind of stuff, like, you know, have somebody that, well, I think if we got on this topic that your wife brought up, Dr. Jones would have had some strong opinions that would have kept the dialogue going. Mm-hmm. Only that, again, I'm in sales before I got in. Well, I was in basketball and AAU with my daughter. While I was in sales, my career was in sales. What you have to do in an event like that, you have to, when I would walk into a sales environment and I saw five or six people, I'm like, I'm not going to make a sale today because everybody's going to want this, that, whatever the case may be. It's going to be hard to nail them down. So when you do a forum like we did there, we have to streamline it and say, okay, these are going to be the topics. And then you, Dave, who was more or less the host, because Yvonne was getting Eton was getting buckets, as was
as was Chuck.
As was Chuck, mean, with their emotion and raw passion. You got to streamline it, and you got to stay to that point, because with a lot of people on the dais, you can get off into the Netherlands.
That's true.
But beautiful event. I mean, and people saw it as relevant and important.
And I'll say something to Eton that I know is going to put a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. I was sort of saving this for on the air, but well, I guess I was saving it for the on the air. No sort of about it. Mm-hmm. But Kevin Blackstone and I spoke a little bit before the event about me coming to speak to his class, which is something I used to do back in the day, particularly when Monica was a student there. I was going like every week. And he was like, yeah, you got to come in. I'm doing this sports protest class. Come in and speak to the kids. I'm like, sure, of course. I love talking to the kids. Mm-hmm. I get a text from him as I'm going home that said, forget the class. Let's bring the collision to UMD.
Dig it, baby. Oh,
and I was just like, boom.
Let's do it.
That felt good.
Let's do it.
My jersey.
Yeah. Definitely.
Especially from KB, you know, because, I mean, that's very high praise coming from him because he has been in this at a very high level in this sports opinionist game for a long time.
And let me put some butter on KB on that, because he has been there in articles that he online for the Post. He takes a lot of backlash if you read the comments. When he was on Around the Horn and the topics they would debate something, and he would dive into the hard part. You know what I mean? The racial context of it and so forth. So on. He's not bashful. He's not shy. He's not. He ascribes to silence as, you know, silence is acceptance. So he takes a lot of heat for the things he do, man. So I'm all thumbs up for him. As is Aldridge, but Aldridge seems to be more center, where KB comes out strong. And I'm saying this because, and he's a favorite because Monica took a lot of classes from him at when she was getting her master's at University of Maryland.
No, a great guy. We also had some fine moments that night. It's something I'm going to remember.
Fine, several, for some time. Many.
No. I mean, that's what I'm. It's good. You know, you always remember when something special starts, and I think we started something very special with these live shows.
That's the key word, start, Dave. We got to do more of these. Go ahead.
Oh no, yeah, and you hone and you figure out what was right, what worked, what didn't, and already I feel like we've got a good game plan for the next one. So folks really do have to listen for upcoming news. We want to try to do one once a month, and you're going to want to come to the next one. That's all I can promise you. Etan, any last thoughts before we go to break?
No, I thought it was great. It was a really special night, and I really like, you know, going to different colleges, because that's one thing that my daughter on the way back, because my daughters were there too, and you know, they're like, yeah, you should do this at some colleges, maybe even some high school. Things like that. I was like, huh. And I asked them, I was like, well, do you think young people would be engaged? They were like, yeah, especially when you start doing the back and forth. You know, when you respectfully disagreed with David Aldridge, and then he came back, and then they liked the back and forth. He's like, that would be great. So we might have to go to some colleges. You know what I mean?
I mean, knowledge is so important. I mean, speaking of colleges, we had a nice crew of Howard students there.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Howard was in the building.
And I had no idea before that night that Howard was named after a Civil War general named Otis Howard, who, like many Northern Civil War generals, took the war to the Native Americans after the war and slaughtered untold numbers of people. I mean, I didn't know who Otis Howard was before that night. I was home, like, doing a deep dive on my computer. And, you know, that's what ideological and mental friction is all about. Like, young people, I feel like, and oh, do I sound old like Coach, but young people sometimes feel like they hold these phones and they have knowledge in their hand.
Right.
But real knowledge comes from being around other people and learning what you don't know.
100%. 100%. Mm. Couldn't agree more.
Well, and so it was a beautiful night. Yo, let's go. And last KB thing, just keeping KB so real. You know, before the Washington football team changed his name, he and I did two separate events at big, predominantly African-American churches that were very pro-Washington football in the city. And, you know, it's one thing for me to do it, but for him to come out there and be like, look, I'm going to take whatever you're throwing at me right now to tell you why this name should change. People were showing up in their burgundy and gold. And
of course.
and I remember just sitting there with him being like, this is a real one right here. Taking his time to go to a church
to
talk about Native American rights. But
That's KB.
Yeah. No, you're right. I digress. Let's go to break right now. We'll be back right after this on The Collision, your home for jazz and justice. That's WPFW 89.3 FM. We're hoping we got Tariq Abdul-Wahad on the other side.
God bless those hating on me. I'm an OG, still a great low-key, ay. Keep winning, keep running up stats. I play the outlet, tank never on E, ay. Glory to the Lord, yeah. Glory to the Lord, yeah. Glory to the Lord, yeah. Ready? Ay, I don't wanna be the star player anymore. I don't gotta be the bar raiser anymore. I'm ready for the elbow jumper. It's I got it, bless God, like, thank you, Lord. Ay, might shine, but it's not my go-to. I grind, but I'm not quite Goku. Not top five, but I still might roast you. I'm pro-life, but I'm anti-social, for real. Stepping out, not my go-to, for real. I still got a little bit of shimmy in the step. Better watch my pivot, I post you, for real. But what I look like, trying tween in the hezzy with them 39. Yeah, my MIDI still work fine. I'm a throwback Cooper, I don't show the whole bag. I keep cooking y'all like the first time, homie, that's facts. God bless those hating on me. I'm an OG, still a great low key. Ayy, keep winning, keep running up stats. I play the outlet tank, never on E. Ayy, glory to the Lord. Yeah, glory to the Lord. Yeah, glory to the Lord. Yeah. Glory to the Lord. Coach, put me in.
We're back here on The Collision. This is where sports and politics collide at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW. Coach, why don't you tell us what that song was? No, I'm just playing. It's on Thomas.
Go to E. I stay in my lane. Go ahead. Take it over, E. You the man.
That was Jared Saunders. He's down with Fizzle. And their crew, but yep, that's him. He's a dope rapper, and he lives right in Virginia. I didn't know he was that local, but we went and saw them perform a few years ago, and I just reconnected with him and found out he lives right in Virginia.
No, amazing stuff, amazing stuff. Well, you know, we did just get started. I know we want to talk about the elections and the like, but we haven't yet said anything about this NBA season that's just gotten underway and about these frisky Washington Wizards and these new look New frisky. York Knicks. I did want to ask you, Tom, before we start, do you see that? Because you and I are both Knicks guys and we take that stuff, you know, that team very seriously.
I'm a Knicks guy too now.
Monica,
by the way, just speaking of Monica, connect the dots here. Monica is the only, she does the radio analysis. You know, you had on your podcast. Mm-hmm. And of the all, what is 30 teams in NBA? She's the only black female that does that. The radio.
Wow, that's first level.
And check this out. I didn't know it until Rick Roden did an article on her for the
For Antscape.
Yeah, Antscape. He brought it up. Yeah. So I didn't know that. But anyway, getting back to, so I'm a Knicks fan too because of that. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and Monica's very good at her job. She also subs for Clyde Frazier, the legend, when he's not out doing it. And she always holds her own with Mike Breen, one of the greats. You know, he's the guy who goes, bang, in case people aren't sure. But, Etan, big controversy in the offseason. I'll ask Coach about this, too. Switching from Coach Tom Thibodeau, who brought the team to the Eastern Conference Finals, replacing him with Mike Brown. They're clearly playing a very different style this year. What are you seeing? Do you find it more effective, pleasing to the eye? Do you think the change was a good one, too early to tell? What are your general thoughts about that particular landscape of things?
Well, I'll let you go first, Coach.
Actually, I'm gonna flip the script here because of time's sake. Because Dave and I walking home from the event, this came up. And I want to ask you, E, because you played, you're a big man. You played in a different era. I am a college guy. One of the reasons why, because there's 60 trays, 30, 35, there's 70 trays. Most teams average 35 trays a game. So what do you think about 70 trays being hoisted up in an NBA game? And you're a big man, played back in the day with physicality. And before you answer the question, when you played, the three-point shot was there when you played, correct?
Because
it's a funny thing. My students, when I tell them that I didn't play with a 3-point shot in college or the dunk, and they just hit the floor. But anyway, answer that question about 70 trays being hoisted in the game. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, that's funny. I was just talking to Jahadi about it. Shout out to Jahadi
White. Jahadi White, yeah.
I don't like it. I'll be honest with you.
Okay,
I
mean, good. You would be.
You'll turn down a layup to kick it back out for open three. I mean, you'll be in a fast break and you'll run to the 3-point line, but not one run for an open dunk. I mean, but what happened was Golden State was successful in that model. So then there was a copycat league and everybody. So I'm hoping that somebody with a dominant big man that goes inside and the mid range and everything like that wins the championship. So basketball can go back to how it's supposed to be. So that's what I feel about that. Now, as far as the Knicks and Coach Thibodeau, you watched the game last night, y'all saw?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yes.
Listen, the thing about the Knicks, Thibodeau did a great job taking them to a place where they did not go to since the Knicks were playing the Pacers, and that's the Eastern Conference Finals. With Patrick Ewing and Reggie Miller, that whole series. That was the last time the Knicks had been to the Eastern Conference Finals.
So and Reggie Miller is in his 60s. We should probably say that.
And I understand people who say, well, why would you change the coach if he took you this far? I understand that completely. However, I don't think that his style of play is the best style for the Knicks or for anyone just playing that many people in the game. He played 7 people, maybe. You know what I mean? And it's not like he had scrubs on the bench. He had guys that could come in and play. They just weren't getting any time. And my thought was, eventually, you're going to wear these guys down. Like, it might work. It might work for a season. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, you got a few injuries, and I'm not saying it was necessarily because of how much they were playing, but you get some injuries. Oh, for the long run, long term, you have to use your bench. You have a bench there. They're capable. You cannot run these guys into the ground. That's my position.
Oh, it's a righteous position. Hey, look, I think what we have on the line, as promised.
Yes.
Look at this former NBA player, stalwart person on questions of human rights, social justice, particularly fighting for a free Palestine. Much respect. Looks like we got Tariq Abdul-Wahad coming in right now. It's coming through.
He's coming. He got to turn his camera on, but it's coming.
and get the audio on point. But once that's the case,
he'll get it on point.
As he's coming in, I want to say something to even preface Tariq coming in. Okay. Because one of the things that, you know, I'm a New Yorker born and raised, and one of the things about Mayor Mamdani, Zohran Mamdani, becoming mayor, which was incredible to me, is I remember what it was like in New York City after 9/11. Okay. Like, the level of Islamophobia was incredible. Yep. And it was horrifying, and people got hurt. And I don't know if y'all remember this, but there was also a situation where an Islamic community center was attempting to be built, you know, maybe a 10-minute walk from Ground Zero World Trade Center. Right wing was organizing marches to keep it from being built, you know, because as if to say a community center had anything to do with what had happened on 9/11, as if saying that Islam as this incredible global religion had anything to do with 9/11. And so to know that the city came out of that in such a horrible way 25 years ago, and to see this young man who wouldn't have only have been 7 years old probably when 9/11 took place. So he grew up his entire life in New York under the specter of that level of Islamophobia. To see him become the mayor, man, I mean, for me and for my Muslim friends back home, the kids I grew up with, I mean, I have no description about what it meant to them. It was overwhelming them. I got more texts from people saying I'm crying than any time I can remember.
Right.
Probably
right.
Since Obama won, honestly, since 08. Like, people just texting me, like, I haven't cried watching a political speech since Barack Obama and Grant Park in 2008. That was a very, very common text I received the other night.
Let me just say this. Van Jones, and I have my issues with Van Jones, and I try to be patient, and I try to, you know, look on, you know, the bright side of him, and I've met him before, and I know his thing about getting emotional while he's on the air, and I get it. But did you hear his comments and his criticisms from Mamdani's his speech, post-victory speech? And I was like, he was almost doing the Stephen A. Smith type and what he was and how he was criticizing Jasmine Crockett and her references and her speaking to Trump. It was along those lines. He was saying you have to come in, you know, more peaceful and more, you know, welcoming. And all you, I was like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? I don't know. For me, it was like, come on, man, you can't keep doing this. But I will get back to that later. We have our guests. Much respect to you, Tariq. How you doing, sir?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
All right.
Oh, man, it's an honor. Mr. Abdul-Wahad, we got to start off just by asking you your reaction to seeing the first Muslim mayor in the history of, I would argue, the most important city in the United States.
David, speak. It's peak. It's crazy.
What was your reaction, and what's the reaction of the people around you?
No, it's weird because in the Muslim tradition, serving is the most important thing. Helping others, being a team player, being about other people. And this guy really embodies that. And it's pretty cool to see that finally it took this nut job Nazi for people to realize that these guys are not there to help anyone. They're there for their personal interest. They're there for their money. They're there for their friends' money. And when someone comes and runs on affordability, runs on supporting others, runs on helping others, it's a resounding, everybody's on board. Like, I'm surprised that it took so long for people to come to this conclusion.
Let me ask you this. Was you surprised? Because I was surprised at the level of Democrat elites, you know, talking about the Chuck Schumers and, you know what I mean, the Hakeem Jeffries, and, you know, that their resistance to support and endorse Mandami. I was like, what are y'all going to endorse Cuomo? Like, what are you doing? And the amount of Islamophobia that was also coming from not the usual suspects of the right, but also people from the left, was a little bit surprising to me. Was it to you?
No, it wasn't. These are two corporate parties. Mm-hmm. These are not political parties that are there to help the people. The supporters of Donald Trump in New York are the exact supporters of Chuck Schumer. What are we doing? This is the same thing. In progressive circles, they call the Democratic Party MAGA light. It's dark. No, I know it's dark to say that, but unfortunately, you just have to follow the money, and you quickly understand that these guys are beholden to the same corporate interests. Therefore, Islamophobia is almost like a pretext. Just go in there and look where the money is going, and who needs the. Do you think these big real estate conglomerate are cool with rent freezes?
No.
No, they're not. No, they're not. So they can try to smear the brother, you know, but at the end of the day, the people have spoken, and what they said is kind of loud. And it's a wake-up call for the entire country, I think.
You know, I thought it was I'm curious what your opinion about this. I thought it was a wake-up call, too, on the question of Palestine and people who care about a free Palestine, because the great motivation by all the Democrats who refused to rally around him was that he was unapologetically for a free Palestine. He said that if Netanyahu came to New York City, he would arrest him as a war criminal. And they thought, oh, that's just going to be poison to the voters in a place like New York City. And instead, the voters said, well, actually, we've been begging during these last 2 years of genocide to see somebody in politics actually stand up and say something. So I saw it as a real watershed moment on that issue, too. You were, of course, someone who's intimately has been involved in that issue. Did you get that read from it as well?
Yeah, I got the same read because it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes a lot of courage, but it takes also it takes also an understanding of the moment. And I think this is where, do not underestimate. Zorhan Mamdani's father is Mahmoud Mamdani, a big time Columbia professor, emeritus, expert in political science. Mm-hmm. He's getting the proper advice, and he understands. He understood fairly quickly that the tide of public opinion had shifted on the issue of Palestine. So it only makes sense that he went that way. But it took some courage. It's not right. But we would have wished that these people were there when we were there.
Yeah.
You understand? Because it's been so long. Like, we don't even realize, but it's been damn near 2 years. This is nuts.
It's been nuts that we've had to wait this long. Sorry, Atan, please.
Oh, man, I didn't want to hog all the questions. Coach, you have a question you want to jump in there with?
Bro, baby, I'm listening and learning. Go.
Okay, cool. I want to talk about Islamophobia in the NBA. And, you know, we we're big fans of Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf on this show. We've spoken to him plenty of times. And I don't know if the level of Islamophobia has changed a lot since those days. Please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm not sure. I don't know. But obviously, I'm not in those circles anymore, right? So it's hard. It's hard to gauge. But this Palestinian issue to link both questions is it has made a drastic difference. Remember, post 9/11, for about 5 to 6 to 7 years there, American society was about demonizing Muslims. Mm-hmm. But now that people are more educated on the issue of, number one, what Islam is, and number two, who and why Muslims are suffering around the world, I've noticed that the NBA is a little bit more, the NBA and many more institutions are a little bit more reluctant to open their mouth and start talking crazy. This is what I've noticed, because the threshold of understanding and knowledge from the American populace has moved up a little bit. So people are more educated now. So it's way harder to demonize a brother like Mahmoud, for example. It's way harder because the nuances and the complexities are starting to hit home with the American public. And American public equals sports fan, right? Because America is all about sports, right? So they I think they're being more careful than they probably used to be.
Well, I think if I can just offer this, because I hear what you're saying, but then I look about the reluctance of every single NBA team to denounce an actual genocide happening. And I don't think this should be a hard thing to do. Thousands of Palestinians are getting slaughtered and ethnic cleansing and starved to death, and you don't say anything as an organization. To me, if it was reversed, and if say that was happening to Israel, every organization would have made statements and everything on behalf. But so I look at it and I'm like, well, what is holding you back to calling out a slaughter, a genocide? And it's hard for me to say that things are getting better.
Yeah. What motivates these people are things that we're not in the loop, and we're not in those meetings. Do you understand what I'm saying?
We're not
in those meetings. Corporate decisions. These guys are making corporate decisions. They're making corporate moves to facilitate the lives of their friends, right? But their humanity, for a lot of these people, their humanity is long gone. I'm not holding my breath, and I'm not saying, oh, I hope that they will come to this conclusion. These people, they worship money. Their number one god is money. I don't anticipate them having a lot of moral compass on a lot of issues. Whatever is best for their, you know, bottom line is what they're going to do.
Time flew by. And we got to have you on again. But I want to tell you, I want to ask you, tell us really quickly, what are you expecting and hoping for to see from Mamdani as being the new mayor of New York?
So that's the super big challenge, because it's one thing to get elected, but then, can he actually deliver? This is my fear. I mean, we've seen what's his name in Pennsylvania got voted on a very progressive platform and then became a senator that is absolutely, you know, a corporate senator that is licking the boots of Israel. Fetterman, whatever his name is. So hopefully this brother, I mean, I'm just saying.
No, that's real talk. Yeah.
I know it sounds scary, because we all want him to do well, right? And help New Yorkers, you know, having a better lives, and this to be an example for the rest of the country, right? Yeah. But listen, these guys play dirty games. They got dirty tricks. Mm-hmm. So I just hope that this brother can deliver on what he promised. And if he does, then hopefully the Democratic Party shifts more to the left, where the masses are, where the Democratic people are, right?
Voters are.
They need to come to us. We don't need to come to them. They need to come left where we are.
Yes.
Wow. Well, Mr. Abdullah, we got to get you to come back on the show. We literally just got to the tip of this iceberg. Yeah. Can you come back sometime so we can get to the rest of the iceberg?
Anytime. Yeah, you serious, Dave. Anytime for you guys. Anytime, Coach. Anytime.
That's my guy right there. No doubt about it. A founding charter member of Athletes for a Ceasefire, a man of uncommon courage. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you. Have a good one, guys. Stay safe out there.
Take care, my brother. Be well. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. I'm Dave Zirin. Etan Thomas, any last thoughts, sir?
No, it's great. Let's just keep doing it. Keep pushing and keep, you know what I mean, doing what we're doing. Coach, thank you for joining us today, too.
Coach, you got any last words, Coach?
Yeah, I want the audience to know that you're playing hurt today, that you got a little cold. But on the other end, you're like Zion Williamson. You're always an IR, so get out of here.
Hey! Zion catching a stray. Dave Z catching a stray. It's all good. Yo, thank you to our audience. Thank you, Magic Mike on the Wheels of Steel.
Magic Mike.
For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty.
Oh, no. Vinny's
we are out of here.
Vinny's commercial. Get out of here.
The industry complex. Working class ball. Better keep your alarm set. Streets too loud to ever hear freedom ring. Say you're back in with your sleep. It's dangerous to dream, but you cheat.
The soul of West Africa lands at Brentwood Arts Exchange's Listening Room on Friday, November 7th at 8 p.m. with Cheikh Amala Jabate, a master of the Ngori, the traditional West African lute. Jabate weaves stories through rhythm and song, blending ancient sounds with a modern spirit that moves both heart and feet. Details at pgparks.com. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org. Make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon, or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
The Capital Area Food Bank is offering free food distribution for federal workers starting now until the government reopens. Federal employees and contractors will need to show a government work ID to receive food. Distribution times and sites are as follows. Tuesdays, 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. at No Limits Outreach Ministries, 7721 Barlow Road, Hyattsville, Maryland. Wednesdays, 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. at So What Else, 6116 Executive Boulevard, North Bethesda, Maryland. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at United Community, 7511 Fordston Road, Alexandria, Virginia. Fridays, 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at Urban Outreach, 5343 C Street, Southeast, Washington, D.C. Saturdays, 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. at Linda Ben Foundation, 10739 Tucker Street, Beltsville, Maryland. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Thank you, family, for standing with WPFW during our fall drive. Because of your support, we shared powerful moments. The No Kings protest, the 30th anniversary of the Million Man March, and a moving all-day broadcast on the struggles in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Listeners in the Congo downloaded our radio app tuned in, and sent us messages of gratitude, proof that your generosity connects people around the world. We came within $30,000 of our goal. If you are able, please help us close the gap and keep WPFW strong. Go to our website at wpfwfm.org, where you can donate or get our P.O. Box number of where to send checks. WPFW, Jazz and Justice, people-powered radio, connecting our communities globally while building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
At 89.3 FM, this is member-supported WPFW, Washington.
In business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before been raking in